Hey everyone, welcome to Health Matters. My name is Harris and I'm going to be your host today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know this time of year can be quite hectic for a lot of people, whether you're in school or work. We're kind of nearing the end of 2022 now, so there are a lot of deadlines and assignments and things that need to be done before the year ends. So I appreciate you tuning in. We have a really important topic today, and that is of gender-affirming care. And gender-affirming care is something that is getting a lot of attention in the media now, but I really wanted to raise more and more awareness about some of the challenges that it's facing in terms of healthcare support, access, and resources. And later in the episode, we're very fortunate to be joined by Dr. Seymour, who's a family physician who is really knowledgeable about gender-affirming care and provides some great insight into this topic. But I just wanted to introduce the conversation a little bit and to really highlight some of the issues that the country and the province are facing. For example, in British Columbia, it's estimated that there are about 46,000 people that could use access to some type of medical or surgical care in the form of gender affirmation, but only very few of these people eventually get the care and treatment that they need. This is because in British Columbia, there is already such an issue with family physicians. Whether you're just a patient looking for a refill on your blood pressure medication, even that can be a bit of a challenge nowadays. And I know the healthcare system is really trying to revamp things, but the point is that even for something that can be done really quickly, like a prescription refill, a lot of people are struggling when it comes to medical care that is a lot more nuanced and more complex in some ways and more deep and requires multiple conversations and a lot of decision making. A family physician that is knowledgeable about this area is really important, and a lot of people are struggling to get somebody that can provide them with that level of care and can walk them through this journey. And so something like gender-affirming care, where a lot of physicians are not too well trained in this area, and that in itself limits the pool of who can help out, I can understand the frustration of a lot of individuals that are seeking this support. And that's why I really felt like this episode was necessary and needed, because the point is to increase our understanding, increase our awareness, and try to provide any type of resources that we can to people that are looking for additional support. And so today I have Dr. Seymour, who I've had the privilege to work with, and she is a phenomenal family physician out in Duncan. And opposed to my typical experience working with family physicians, she really has a focus on gender-affirming care in her practice, and she does a phenomenal job at that. I've seen so many patients in her clinic that are really appreciative of how thoughtful and caring she is and how much attention she pays to even the small details. And that's something that I really took away from my time with her, is that a lot of people are going through many things, and with any type of health decision, there comes a lot of anxiety and stress and even depression, and she's able to look at people in a holistic manner and address not only some of their more medical questions, but also she really looks at the mental health aspect of things and walks patients through that as well. And so we had an amazing conversation that I'm going to play for you right now about gender-affirming care, changes that she would like to see in the healthcare system, and just some tips that she has for anybody listening. And so without further ado, I would like to play you guys the interview that I had with Dr. Seymour. I hope you can take away some of the gems that she had to share. Enjoy. Hi, everyone. I would like to introduce Dr. Patricia Seymour. She's a family physician working in Duncan on the island. I've had the privilege to work with Dr. Seymour last year, and it was such a phenomenal experience. She's exceptionally knowledgeable, very kind, very caring. All of her patients love her. And it was a really good time in Duncan, and I learned a ton. And today we have the honor of Dr. Seymour joining us. And so, Dr. Seymour, thank you so much for coming. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, thank you very much for having me. Well, as you said, yes, I'm a family doctor. I've worked in this community, Duncan, since 2008. I do full service, full scope family practice, which includes hospital rounds. And I became interested in gender affirming care around 2015, 2016, when my child came up to me as transgender. And that was the beginning of a great and evolving education.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that was another thing that I was hoping you could speak a little bit more on is what, for the people who are not really familiar with the gender affirming care, can you explain that and what that entails?
Yeah. Gender affirming care really refers to care for transgender or gender diverse people, those who have a gender identity that does not align with so-called sex assigned at birth. And so gender affirming care is a growing specialty that allows people exploring gender to do so in a safe and accepting environment and to access medical and social and legal services. So I would be doing mostly medical, but also a little bit of the social aspect of gender-affirming care.
Right. And what do you think are some of like the challenges that you notice in your practice when it comes to gender-affirming care? I feel like just off the top of my head, I think accessibility would be a big issue. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, accessibility is an issue. Certainly, and the reason why I started doing this work was because when my child came out to me as transgender a number of years ago, really the only place that we could access care at the time was, well, the hormone assessments, as they're called, was being provided by only one psychologist in Victoria, and I was not aware of any other assessors at the time. And then the actual hormone treatments were being provided through the gender clinic in Vancouver. So since then, there's been quite a I guess an evolution or an increase in the numbers of particularly primary care practitioners who do gender affirming care, such as myself. But along with that, which is a great thing, along with that, though, there have been an explosion of numbers as I think younger people start to understand that they are able to come out and to seek help. So access is still a challenge for sure. And I'm about the only one in my area that does this sort of work. So that makes it a little bit challenging.
For sure. And if there's like somebody who's listening or somebody who's thinking about going through that process and they don't know where to start, what do you suggest for them? Like what is like the first step that they can take?
Well, there is an amazing organization called TransCare BC, and they've got a very comprehensive website. TransCare BC has been functioning for many years, actually, and has been growing in terms of size and influence, and is it an organization that really advocates for access and for gender affirming care. So they can actually help people navigate the system, find family doctors or primary care practitioners who offer primary care to those who are gender diverse, and also can help them find hormone assessments and surgical assessments. So TransCare BC is an amazing resource. The World Professional Association for Transgender Health, which is a big mouthful, WPATH, also has incredible information on their website,
right,
and have just published a Standards of Care, a new edition of the Standards of Care. So they're excellent. And then for youth, if you visit the Gender Clinic, BC Children's Hospital Gender Clinic, there's an enormous range of resources there as well.
Right.
So that would be a good place to start.
Yeah. And do you still find like it's really difficult with wait times and finding surgeons that can provide this level of care, or has that been something that's improving? What have you noticed is the trend at the moment?
Well, depending on the service that is being sought, yes, the wait times can be long. Surgery wait times, for example, depending on the surgery, for bottom surgeries, as they're called, can be upwards of 18 months to 2 years. But there, having said that, there is now a surgical center in Vancouver doing bottom surgeries and chest surgeries, and they opened their doors in September of 2019. Prior to that, people had to travel out of country, out of province, in order to access care. So at least the surgical care is now close to home or closer to home, even though the wait times are long. And chest surgeries, yes, the wait times are long, but compared to those individuals seeking, for example, breast reduction surgeries, which can sometimes take 3 to 4 years to access. Access to chest surgeries for trans individuals sometimes as short as 8 to 10 months up to 18 months. So yes, long wait times, but thanks to the efforts of organizations like TransCare BC and increasing access to services, it's not terrible.
And if there are, like, say somebody's in a financial situation where they can afford going a private route, is that an option? Are there places that can do more private type of work for this?
Yeah, absolutely. There are places that can do private surgeries. Pretty expensive, but there are some people who seek surgeries outside of medical services plan.
And I think one thing that I really noticed when I was in your clinic is there was such a almost hand in hand was challenges with going through the gender affirming care, but also some like of the mental health difficulties that a lot of these patients faced. I saw that you were almost doing both concurrently in almost majority of your patients. Does that sound correct? And I guess I would hoping if you could speak a little bit more on that and like what you've noticed in your clinic and what type of stresses these patients deal with.
Yeah, there's a whole range of mental health issues that trans and gender diverse people face. I mean, there are many who are thankfully very well adjusted and well supported, and I think that especially for youth, the number one, I would say, indicator or factor that ensures their their mental health and well-being is the support of their families. There's a lot of excellent data and some research that came out of Toronto actually that shows how important that is, parental and family supports. But there are many who don't have those supports and have concurrent mental health issues. And yeah, it's of utmost importance that they have the kind of supports that they need in order to navigate transition and access care.
Would you say it's mostly like lack of family support that tends to be one of the biggest stressors for these individuals, or is it bullying at school? Like, what do you think is like, what are, or is it, I guess, of course, it could be a mix of all of them, but what do you think tends to weigh the heaviest?
I think for youth, absolutely. If you look at if you compare groups of youth who have supportive, loving families to those who don't, the rates of depression and suicide are far, far, far greater in the group of youth that are not supported. In those that are supported, they are higher for sure, but certainly comparable to their cisgender peers. And if you have the support of your family, of course, when you encounter bullying at school, you've got someone at your back, to support you. But certainly, trans individuals and gender diverse people encounter a lot of discrimination and violence, and that can absolutely contribute to increased rates of suicide for sure. And that's that is still a very real problem, a very big problem.
For sure. And just from, I had a previous episode where we discussed mental health, and one tip I can provide to the listeners is there's a program called Bounce Back through the Canadian Mental Health Association, and that's a free resource that they can use, and it kind of, so they can talk to someone and sort of get back on their feet in terms of mental health support. Is there anything that you tend to recommend to your patients in terms of kind of regaining control over their mental health?
I absolutely would agree with that. For youth that are suffering from mental health issues, but even for those who are generally happy and well adjusted, I always recommend that they connect with a counselor. That's sometimes difficult because counseling is not a service that is covered by our provincial health plan.
Yeah.
And we, those of us who do this sort of work, are very hopeful that consideration will be made to funding mental health services for all people, but particularly for youth and those with gender dysphoria. So connecting with a youth counselor, and for adults as well, I think it's so important to have the kind of support from a gender-affirming counselor in order to be able to navigate transition and all of the challenges associated with that.
Absolutely, yeah. And do you think there are, I feel like from what I've seen, universities are trying to make more of an effort in terms of getting more care for like something like counseling. I think they're like increasing the amount of coverage under our health insurance. So that's like, I think, a little bit of a positive change in that direction. Is there anything like for patients that are looking for a fix, like they're really struggling? Do you tend to recommend going down the pharmaceutical route, or do you try to push lifestyle, or is it a merge between both? What would you say?
For mental health, treatment of mental health issues, do you mean?
Yeah.
Well, again, it really depends. I think it would be very dependent on the actual person. Again, for youth, we see a lot of youth with complex mental health issues where medications are definitely required in order to stabilize them. But I always say that nothing can replace or take over for a continuous relationship with a counselor who can offer the kind of safety and support that is really needed. You know, medications are just one small part of supporting a person from the point of view of mental health and social well-being. So yes, it's difficult when you don't have counselors that are actually funded. So yeah, I'm just going to go back to that point.
Definitely. And if you're a loved one or a family member or a friend listening, what would be the best piece of advice you would give them if they know somebody personally who is going through this transitioning period?
Well, I think probably the most important thing is respecting and accepting the person's gender identity as an authentic expression of who they are, and not asking them to explain or account for that. Respecting the name that the person would like to be addressed as. And again, there's an ever-growing body of evidence that shows that just using a person's preferred name can be life-saving and can reduce suicide thoughts and gestures by well over 50%. There's lots of good evidence there. And respecting pronouns. So I think those are very basic and very simple first steps that people can take to support someone who is coming out.
Yeah, no, I think that's really great advice. And then I just a little bit left I wanted to ask you about was if you could see one change being made in our healthcare system, it can be in terms of gender affirming care or just healthcare in general. What would you like to be seen be done in the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years?
I think I'm going to go back to that mental health
Yeah.
piece and the need for funding from our government to support to support the mental health of our youth and adults. And I mean, gender affirming care and mental health issues amongst that population of people is definitely worth addressing, but in general, I think that is an enormous gap in our healthcare system. So that would be the plea that I would make. I mean, there are lots of other things, of course, that it would be also excellent to see more primary care practitioners, family doctors, and nurse practitioners, practicing or adopting, putting themselves out for and doing gender affirming care. Anyone can do a hormone assessment and prescribe hormones, and there are lots of good supports and lots of what am I looking for? The continuing medical education resources that are provided through TransCare BC as well as through the College of Family CFPC. So, I would just invite people to get trained up and start doing this very important work.
No, that sounds amazing. I think that would be a really good change that we would hopefully see in the near future. And then just the last question for you, Dr. Seymour. We don't typically or often get physicians on our show, so if we have the opportunity, we'd love to hear one piece of advice that you would like to give in terms of bettering someone's health. If they want to make one little adjustment to their habits, or maybe you've done something, maybe you've included meditation or diet or something, what's one little tidbit people can add to their life?
In general, you mean
Yeah,
just for.
anything. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would say probably in this world and time of increasing social media and demands upon our time and ourselves is to learn how to establish firm boundaries and say no in order to look after yourself and your needs and to be able to spend time with your friends and family, because that's such an important part of health and well-being,
I couldn't
and
agree more.
and of finding joy in life.
I agree. I think screens are taking over our lives.
Absolutely.
One screen at a time. So thank you so much, Dr. Seymour. It was such a pleasure to have you. I think we learned a ton about gender affirming care and just medicine in general, and we really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been an honor and a privilege. Thank you.
So that was my interview with Dr. Seymour. I always have such an amazing time speaking with her. I learn so much with every conversation that we have. And so I just wanted to share that with the listeners. Hopefully, everybody took away something from that conversation, whether it was just a piece of information on how important this topic is and how there are so many changes that need to be made, or maybe you found a resource that you can use for yourself or somebody that you know in your life. And as always, near the end of every episode, we tend to end with a meditation piece. So I'll just get you to try to close your eyes if you're in a comfortable environment, and you can just listen to the music, relax, try to take some deep breaths, and just de-stress from the day. So I'll play the piece right now. And as always, thank you so much for tuning into Health Matters. I hope you took something away from today's episode and enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.
Thank you.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media,